This is a CBC podcast.
Coming up on The Cost of Living.
I think that people would be really surprised. Like, how could you forget about money, especially in this day and age when everybody could really use every last dollar they can get their hands on?
How could anyone forget about money? Like, it's money. But it does happen. You could actually be forgetting some right now. Hi, I'm Paul Habershude, and this is a special summer encore presentation of The Cost of Living. Billions of dollars, yes, billions, are sitting in bank accounts. And that money is getting lonely. Canadians may not know it's there, or we forgot about it. So, do you know where all your money is? Also today, and please, stop me if you've heard this before, but the boomers are retiring. In Canada, we need to build a lot of stuff right now. So who's going to do it? Well, women make up half the population, but less than 10% of skilled trades workers. Mandy Renahan says that math is simple, and the money is good. That's later in the show. Up first, when you think emergency, you may think sirens blazing, stuff burning, something needs to be done urgently. Right now, more people are saying that about Canada's economy. Bank of Canada Deputy Governor Carolyn Rogers gave a speech recently, and this got people's attention.
You know those signs that say, in an emergency, break the glass? Well, it's time to break the glass.
If you're a central banker, that's like yelling fire in a theater. So what's she talking about? Canada's economic productivity. It's been a worry for like 30 years. So why now is it time to break the glass? Productivity is like the slow-moving train of economic crises. If it lags for a few years, nothing much changes. But what happens after 5 years, or 10, or 20? Well, let's compare life in Canada to life in a country where productivity hasn't kept up. Argentina. If you go back 100 years, our economic productivity was about the same. Then Canada's took off, and Argentina's didn't. Amelia McGoldrick moved to Buenos Aires from Toronto 13 years ago. She's a photographer, she went to visit a friend, and decided to make it home. What differences does she see?
Things are hard to get here. Electronics are extremely expensive here. So for example, I have to shoot a little wedding, and I realize that my battery charger for my flash doesn't work. And the batteries and a charger is 169,000 pesos. So that's $160 for a charger with four batteries.
In Canada, that charger would cost more like 20 bucks. Amelia says that's par for the course in Argentina. Anything imported there will almost definitely be more expensive. And that's if it's available.
The grocery stores look way different than they do when I go home to a grocery store in Canada. Because there's so much choice and there's so many aisles and they're stocked full. Like if I go to my grocery store, there's like nothing on the shelves. We had a huge mosquito issue here, like, and there was no bug spray. Like it was a huge problem. And like on the expat groups on Facebook and whatnot, when the shelves are empty, they don't replenish things quickly or it's difficult to. And then sometimes things just vanish altogether.
In other ways, she says living in Argentina isn't all that different from Canada. The cell phone service is good. So is healthcare. But the hospitals aren't that new, and wait times can be long. She likes living there. Good people, weather, food. But at the same time,
it can be really trying on your patients. Things just don't work here the way that they do elsewhere. So it's just sort of like, I don't know, you just take it all in stride, I guess.
Paul Beaudry says that's exactly what you'd expect when you think about someone living in a country with lower productivity. He's an economics professor at the University of British Columbia.
You'd have someone that's kind of would have a much smaller house that would have, you know, much less kind of capacity to kind of go on vacation. The health system will not be kind of supportive of it the same way. Where's the median person? What kind of way do they live? And what kind of things do they have access to? And there's a lot of aspects that you have a lot less.
Productivity can be defined as the output you get from what you put in. Here's an example the Bank of Canada uses to explain it. Think about a baker who can make 5 dozen cookies an hour. To do that, they need mixing bowls, flour, an oven, labor. If that baker gets a new mixer and can then make 6 dozen cookies an hour, that's their productivity going up. They can sell more cookies, make more money. Personally, they can buy more stuff. Governments get more tax revenue.
Productivity allows you to kind of have something that's going to be better for a lot of people. If you don't have the higher productivity, you won't be able. It's not even in the options. So I always think productivity is a necessary condition to have our living standards increase.
He says you can draw a straight line between productivity and our standard of living. That covers everything from the quality of a country's education system and healthcare, poverty levels, how much money people have to buy stuff. Think about how long it takes to save up to buy something. Like, how many hours of work does it take to buy a cell phone? The answer to that question is very different depending on where you live.
If you want an iPhone, maybe in, you know, a rich country, you kind of think, oh yeah, well that's the equivalent of, you know, 3 days or 5 days or 10 days of work, as opposed to a month or 2 months of work. And that's really what we call productivity. So asking just the price is not very informative. It's really relative to kind of the amount of time you have to work to kind of get that.
Canada's economic productivity is still going up, but barely. And we're falling behind other countries. Germany, Sweden, France, Ireland, they're all doing better than us. That means their standard of living is improving faster.
Among the kind of more advanced economies, almost only one has really done worse than us, and that's Italy. But besides that, we're kind of on that bottom part of the group in among advanced economies.
We're not expected to get off the bottom anytime soon. When the OECD ranked 38 countries on expected productivity growth over the next 40 years, it put Canada last. So why is our productivity so poor? Well, pick a reason. Not enough competition. Interprovincial trade barriers, businesses don't invest enough. How about homegrown companies take their billion-dollar ideas to the U.S. instead of staying here? So how do you even start fixing any of this?
First of all, I think it has to be put on the political agenda as a real priority. That means kind of having it at the discussion at many levels to kind of say, you know, figuring out in the regulation, do we have the right regulations that are helping? Do we have incentives that are kind of getting business to grow and stay in Canada? Do we have kind of coordination across provinces? So it's a lot of all these little pieces, probably all of the ones that you've heard already, little parts. So it's not like I'm being very kind of innovative here, but you need to kind of get them all working together and recognizing that this is really an issue.
For as much as we're now worrying about productivity, it's still a, we'll get around to it kind of thing. Like so many long-term issues, the productivity problem is insidious. Life is pretty good, pretty good, pretty good, and then it's less good. When Paul Beaudry looks at this country's problems, he sees lagging productivity starting to hit home. Wages aren't keeping up with inflation, life is getting more expensive, millennials and Gen Z wonder if they'll ever own a home.
You know, if you take younger people and ask them, do they feel that they have a future that's kind of growing, you start getting maybe questions that are kind of a little bit less clear on that front. Like I say, we were still growing for a while, just growing a bit slower and kind of, you know, it wasn't so noticeable. And then slowly as we're stagnating more and more, then this difference of kind of noticing, okay, are we kind of offering to our children the same future that other countries are offering to their children? And that's the type of aspect that kind of brings more of the crisis, I think.
Canada's biggest play to fix productivity is immigration. The idea being that more people will help spur innovation and the economy. But we've also thrown a lot of other stuff at the wall. We've made billions available for research. You might remember the Innovation Superclusters plan. But is any of this enough to fix the problem?
I do think that recognition is percolating. I do think we're getting it more on the general kind of discussion. But I don't see, for example, any political party at this point that's really putting it up there as kind of a major platform and saying this is really where we have to do things and kind of move forward.
When you look at almost any ranking of best countries in the world to live, Canada is almost always near the top. Life here has been sweet for a long time. And it's not like we're going to become Argentina overnight. But for a lot of years, Argentina probably didn't think that either. This is an encore presentation of The Cost of Living. I'm Paul Heverschrood. Have you ever put on a coat you haven't worn since last winter? You reach into the pocket and what do we have here? A $20 bill? Ha ha ha! Found money! Big win! What if it was even bigger? Because Canadians, sharp as we are, can also be absent-minded. We've actually forgotten about billions of dollars. In a story that first ran earlier this year, our producer Danielle Nerman says some of that money could be yours.
Kathy McDermott hadn't heard from her ex-husband in years. Then one day, he called, out of the blue, told her she had some free money to claim. She was like, yeah, right.
And I went, oh, you're kidding me. Do you really think this is real or is this a scam?
It was real. Kathy invested some money more than 20 years ago. At the time, she was living in British Columbia. Then she moved to the Middle East, then back to Alberta. So her bank lost track of her.
When they finally sent me the statement, because it's like a printed statement of when you invested, and I said, oh yeah, I remember that now.
Now, if you're thinking,
how could you forget about money, especially in this day and age when everybody could really use every last dollar they can get their hands on, Marissa Solos is with the Financial and Consumer Services Commission of New Brunswick. She says it's actually pretty easy to lose track of money.
You left a job but maybe never returned to receive your last paycheck, or if there's a relative who passed on leaving an estate but they weren't able to locate the heirs, overpayments or refunds, security deposits, or you received a check in the mail that you didn't cash.
This fall, New Brunswick launched Funds Finder NB, a program that helps people find and claim their forgotten dollars. BC, Alberta, and Quebec have similar initiatives, and so does the Bank of Canada. It collects any money that's been sitting untouched in bank accounts for more than a decade. Add up all the cash Canadians have left behind, and it's a whopping $2 billion. And some of that money has been sitting around forever. The oldest account, an estate worth about $200, dates back to the 1850s. The biggest payout happened in Quebec about 10 years ago. Someone walked away with roughly $4 million. If you think you've lost track of some of your money, Google Unclaimed Property Canada. Then punch your name into the various databases.
You can search for yourself. You can search, you know, friends and family. So if you're trying to get into the good books with somebody, you could always search their name and see if there's some forgotten funds there you could let them know about.
I did this for myself, my parents, my siblings, my aunts, my uncles, my cousins, my friends, my best friend's boyfriend. Right now, the largest single unclaimed balance is nearly $2 million. Now, most people who go looking for forgotten money don't get that kind of windfall. But Kathy McDermott did pretty well on that investment she forgot. And after a battle with cancer, she decided to take the money and live a little.
So I thought, to heck with it. My sister lives in England, so I phoned her and I said, guess what? You're coming to Canada and we're going to Las Vegas.
Kathy did some gambling in Vegas, played the slots, So did she make any return on that investment?
No. No.
For The Cost of Living, I'm Danielle Nerman. That there were more than 24 hours in the day. Even if there were 40 more, I wouldn't sleep a minute away. Oh, there's blackjack and poker and the roulette wheel.
This is a best-of edition of The Cost of Living. I'm Paul Habersham. All you need is a strong heart and a nerve of steel. Viva Las Vegas! Viva! In Canada, about 4 million people work in the trades. That's around 1 out of every 5 workers. More than 700,000 of them are expected to retire by the end of the decade. As for younger people coming up to take their place, well, there's just not that many of them. So who's going to build all the houses this country needs and then fix all the plumbing, electrical, and roofs of those houses? Mandy Renahan is the head of the construction company Freshco, and the host of Trading Up with Mandy Renahan on HGTV Canada. She believes more people should pick the trades as a career. Hi, Mandy.
Hey, Paul. How you doing, buddy?
I'm well, thanks. So, Mandy, we've been talking about a lack of skilled trade workers for a long time. Governments have launched awareness campaigns. Trade schools have upped their recruiting. Do you see this situation as getting better or worse?
Oh, there's no doubt about it. I mean, Paul, I've been ringing the bell for 20 years. As idiotic as it sounds, Paul, the reality is that, you know, peer pressure is real. When we push academia on, you know, all of the kids in school to go to university because that's how you're going to be respected, what we're facing right now is, you know, the outcome.
Yeah, and now you run a construction company. So what do you see when you're trying to hire people?
It's hard because all of a sudden that same guy and his brother or the couple or whoever that used to do work for you, they're like, I can't hire anybody. I can't find anybody. Nobody has any experience. And not only can you not find people because everybody's busy, Canada's growing. Our infrastructure's growing. So all the big companies out there, the top five that are doing a lot of the infrastructure projects and a lot of the big maintenance on what we have, you know, they get a lot of the skilled people. And so the small companies or the mid-cap companies, kind of like us, you know, we're kind of down at the bottom scrounging to find talent, you know, I'm in the retail world and never mind the consumer. I mean, Paul, it's a bad time to be a consumer if you want anything done that involves a tradesperson.
So if I think about how this might be fixed, isn't it just like money and pay more and people will come? That's the free market, right? Like that's how it works. Like Mandy, if someone comes to work for you, what's the money like?
The money was always good, Paul, but now it's extra good. It's extra good. So right now, a plumber coming out, you know, out of an apprenticeship after 4 years, a carpenter, a bricklayer, somebody in welding. I mean, they could start out anywhere between $45 and $60 an hour.
And if you're doing that, if you're paying $45 to $60 an hour, which is like nice money, and you're saying that's to start, as that goes up, how much of that flows through to sort of your customer, the people you charge? Like, what does that mean for their bill?
So the consumer is still going to be the one that pays. Inflation or not, we're going to see it's going to be a lot more for you to build your house. It's going to be a lot more for you to get a renovation. It's going to be a lot more than it used to be, $70 or $80, Paul, for somebody to come to your house as a service call, just to look at your dishwasher. Now you're going to pay double that. You know, this, since the pandemic, the cost of a plumber, the cost of a carpenter, the cost of a handy person, you know, anybody, glazing, you name it, Paul. The reality is it's gone up almost 40% in 3 years because there's not enough of them. And the other thing to understand, Paul, too, is that we've got a lot of our trade schools right now are full, which is a plus. It's a real bonus. Like there's a big smile on my face right now on radio. But it's really important for us to realize that those same people that are in school, they've got years out in the field before they have the ability to know what they're doing. and them actually being an asset to an employer.
Huh. Well, you know, you got into the trades, as we've been talking about. How did that happen for you?
Oh, you know, Paul, I left home, as everybody knows, with a dirty hockey bag full of everything I had. A little bit of personality, just a little. A lot of ambition. And, you know, I university was not a thing, Paul, for me. I knew academically it wasn't what I wanted, and I didn't have the money. So I did part-time jobs, and I called people, you know, in the Halifax area, in the Truro area, and I used to say, listen, can I work for you for free to gain experience? Well, you know, Paul, they used to hang the phone up on me because they thought I was crazy. So,
well, yeah, of course.
Of course, right? Even back then. And I would call back, and I would say, my name's Mandy Renahan. I'm from Yarmouth, and I promise you're going to like me. And I will be an asset to your company, I promise.
And I wanted you, so what, you went and like rented some fancy houses in the south end of Halifax, or what'd you do?
Yeah, did a little bit of that. But, you know, I've pulled a lot of wire. I've carried a lot of toilets. I've, you know, run piping, been on roofs. I basically taught myself, Paul, a little about every trade in 2 or 3 years until I saw a big void. And the void in the industry being female was the management part of it. And so, you know, people were coming to me. It was kind of like I said, my name spread on the East Coast, Paul, like a bad fart. You know, it was like this girl from Yarmouth. And I, the next thing you know, I was doing $500,000 in business by the time I was 20.
Huh. Well, then where do you see women fitting into the trades and also sort of the labor crunch that we're talking about?
Oh, you know, women make up more than half the population, Paul. And so here you have this great pool of skill. I mean, whenever I'm on site with the program, I'm the brand ambassador for Jill of All Trades, JOTE, which is an awesome program of young ladies from, you know, grades 9 to 12 that show up at a trade school for the day. And they're taught how to, you know, pull wire, carpentry, insulation, bricks. And a lot of the guys that are the teachers at these schools will pull me aside and say, Mandy. And I'm like, why are we whispering? And they're like, bring me more women. They're great. You know, because, you know, women bring a different skill set. You know, they're very fastidious. They're very loyal. They do things once, you know, and they're extremely detailed, Paul.
Well, yeah, I think the last number I saw was StatsCan says only about 5% of skilled trade workers are women. Now, you know, if you think about, well, we've got this labor crunch, we have a shortage of workers and only 5% are women, but oh, hey, 50% of the population is women. It feels like the math is kind of straightforward there.
Yeah, 100%. I also think that we also got to realize that there's a lot of internal women too, that I don't think that these stats ever pick up, that are in project management, site management, Paul, like all these other different types of trades. But I also would say that, you know, the other thing that doesn't hit that stat is there's probably about 2 to 3% of women, Paul, that don't make it because of the, you know, the headwinds. And I've seen it my whole career. And so when you have, you know, these women who have had the courage to go into the trades, they're maybe one of two in a classroom of 20. And they love what they're doing. They're ready to go. They get out on a job site and you've just got that arsehole that just does not get it. And it, you know, myself and a lot of the advocates of women that are in the industry have spent some good time, you know, really mentoring and talking these women down from quitting, because they're just like, I didn't sign up for this. I didn't sign up to be catcalled, you know, when I have as many skills as he does or more. So that's something that's really starting to change, Paul. But like everything, we started too late. And so now we're not going to fix everything overnight.
All right. Then finally, Mandy, and I appreciate the time here, is then if you're making a pitch to someone to go into the trades, what's your pitch?
My pitch is, who the hell wants to be a millionaire? And it works every time, Paul. Because I look at them and I say, if I can do it with what the adversity that I was challenged with 30 years ago, today with all the avenues, all the support, all the mentorship, Paul, they can too. Because I can tell you what, Every consumer that opens up the door and sees a woman standing there with her iPad or her clipboard ready to give them a quote, you'll see. It's catching on, and it's gonna keep going.
Well, Mandy, I've said it. If I said it once, I said it 100 times. I should have been a millwright.
100%, 100%. But you do have a great voice for radio, Paul. I got to tell you.
Well, I appreciate it, Mandy Renahan. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Paul. I really appreciate the time.
Mandy Renahan is the CEO of Freshco, the construction company, not the grocery store.
Oh, hi, Danielle Nerman here. I'm one of the producers on The Cost of Living. And next week, we're going to talk about seniors' discounts. A lot of places offer great deals to people 65 and over. Sometimes even 55 and over get those deals. But some are wondering if it's time to retire the seniors' discount, like Laura Backstrom, who lives in Victoria.
I'm in a city where I would probably have to say the seniors are pretty on the wealthier side. And at my rec center, for a 3-month pass, senior is $95 and adult is $120. That's quite a big difference. And I'm thinking that, you know, with mortgage payments being super high for a lot of young families, that might just really put it out of reach for a young adult. And they're paying more than a senior who may actually still be in their prime earning years. They might be earning more than they ever have in their lives between 55 and 65.
More on that next week on The Cost of Living. In the meantime, we want to know, do you think it's time to rethink the seniors' discount? Give us a shout. 1-866-550-COST. That's 1-866-550-2678.
That's all for this week. The Cost of Living is based in Calgary. The show is produced by Daniel Nerman, Ellis Cho, and Jennifer Keane, with help from Caroline Ferris. I'm Paul Havershrood. Thanks for listening.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.